And I think one of the biggest skills I've seen in the people I admire and the successful people is they have a very short memory, both from a perspective of failure and success. If they nail the morning, they forget about it. They're in the present moment. They're focusing on how do I hold this promise in the present moment. If they fail, they forget about it. They're like, this new moment is an opportunity to nail it.
Well, thank you for coming on the podcast, because to me, you represent somebody who had the vision at 15 years old and actually executed on it and has executed on it for the past 3 years. And that is particularly impactful for me because I know my own dreams at 15. I knew my own talent at 15 and I stopped. And you are somebody who's now going strong on your vision for 3 years now. And that's such a heartwarming thing for me to see. And the way you carry yourself and the way you operate in the world is as somebody who is in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, is like not an 18-year-old. And when I say all of that, I just want to thank you for being you, because you continue to inspire me every day. So I appreciate you, bro.
I appreciate it. Yeah, our journey of friendship has been interesting. I think Dom Fusco mutually introduced us. We got coffee. A mutual friend of ours, Max Reisinger, he's got this funny term that I picked up on. He says jam. So I'll say we jammed for 3 hours. And it's just been cool to, you know, run into you at the running shoe store the other week, you running in 20 degree weather and in shorts and a t-shirt. And I'm like, what's this guy doing? But it's been so cool to listen to your podcasts and learn from them and now to be a part of it. I feel extreme, like, I don't even have the words for it, because the people you have on, it's like, they're so wise and I've gained so much wisdom from it. So it's full circle to be a guest on the show, and hopefully I can reiterate some helpful knowledge to the listener today.
Well, I have no doubt you will do that based on spending all the time that I do with you. And with that being said, I'd love to start with the start of the vision for the Running Effect. Where did that come from, and what were the origins of it?
The origins take me way back to 5-year-old Dominic in Erie, Pennsylvania. For those in Austin, they'll know we kind of just went through a rough patch of winter weather. They don't understand Pennsylvania. So where I grew up, where I was born, Erie, Pennsylvania, I believe at least a few years ago, they got the most snowfall in inches out of any U.S. city. So we were snowed in all the time. And like, school would only get canceled if it snowed like 2 feet of snow, like 10 inches. It was like the roads were clear. They had the most insane process. For me, we were homeschooled growing up. I went to preschool, I believe, but outside of that, I was homeschooled my whole life. And so my mom and dad were like, well, we don't want to have our kids cooped up inside for 3 months. We got to get them active. And so they would take us to the local YMCA, so like the local gym, for those who aren't familiar with the YMCA, for 3 times a week. We'd wake up at 6 a.m. and we'd run 30 minutes around the upstairs track, which I remember so well. It was 20 laps to a mile. Quickly, at 5 years old, I have 3 older sisters. You're not better than them at much. And so this was something that I realized very quickly, and my brothers made me realize that I was better at them at running. Yeah. And so they would like egg me on. We'd like play different games of like, how many times can you lap Catherine, or like stuff like that. And that's when I was like, wow, I'm kind of like good at this, and I'm better at my sisters than something. Like, this is pretty cool. And so that's kind of where the passion started. I think a lot of passions start from like, you realize there's somewhat of a natural gift. Throughout the years, did cross country and track a little bit, but mostly it was cross country in Pennsylvania. We moved to Ohio, and in Erie, I was winning the championship every year, like first, second, third grade. We moved to Ohio, and I kind of got my ass handed to me, pardon my French, a little bit. And that was kind of a wake up call of like, oh, you thought you were good at this? Like, you actually probably need to put in some work to be the best at this again. I don't know if the talent's fallen away or the kids are better. Looking back, the kids were just better. And so I went down this deep dive exploration of like, how do I get good at this sport? Through that, would go to the library, would like check out every book on running that I possibly could, like Running for Dummies, some random memoir, like all sorts of books. And I also, I think I got an email, like I got permission from my mom to like get a Gmail in sixth grade, and started trying to find emails of like top athletes and coaches. And looking back on those emails is hilarious. I'll release them one day, but like the cold emails were hilarious from a seventh grader. And it was essentially like, how do I get good at this sport? And through that, in eighth grade, I won our city championship, pretty stacked field. So it was like a pretty big deal. And so for me, the spark went off for the first time of, wow, how many other people are out there that want to take their running to the next level, but don't have the resources to do so. And so that's kind of where the spark for the Running Effect came from. Took me 2.5 years to actually act on it. But yeah, that's
what were
you
doing from 12 and a half to 15? Like, right. You're really wasting your time out here.
Right. So, and I feel like honestly, those years, I'm glad I didn't start in eighth grade. One, it would have been hilarious to hear an eighth grader have a podcast. But two, I feel like, you know, you just mature so much throughout those years. And so COVID happened and I realized I had a little more time. And also, again, we'll probably get into this a lot in the conversation because it's core to who I am. But it was like the what if factor of like, oh, what if I don't start a podcast? I felt like a service to kids out there and other people to actually create the resources. Because people don't realize that when you think of high school sports, you think of football, baseball, basketball being the most popular. But track and field is actually the number one most popular sport in high school. And I think cross country is the sixth. And combined, there are over 1.5 million high schoolers who compete every year. So it's like, why aren't we creating resources for these people? And that's kind of when I actually acted on that spark going into my sophomore year.
So incredible. And it's like, on that point of so many people are doing this sport, but it's not being covered, it was like such a clear white space for anyone to take over. And you've just said to yourself, okay, I'm going to be this person. But like, what 15-year-old, I mean, I know because I was that 15-year-old too, but what 15-year-old actually has the courage to follow what they want to do like that?
I think you would understand this because you know me well, but being the youngest of six kids, I've had the extreme privilege of growing up around older people my entire life and kind of being forced to be in their circle, particularly my two oldest brothers. Their friends were my friends growing up. I didn't really have friends my age. And that was kind of a, it wasn't like I couldn't get friends my age. It was like, I just loved my brother's friends.
Yeah.
And so from the youngest age, I think I was like forced to grow up a little quicker. And also I have the most amazing siblings. Like they were all doing incredible stuff. Even my oldest brother who, like musically, I don't think we would have thought that he would go where he is today. But like in high school, he was like, you know, doing some smaller stuff that, you know, as a kid, it was like, oh, that's very inspiring. Like, I wonder what my version of this could be. And so it's hard to say because like most people don't have the privilege of like having amazing older siblings, specifically like five of them. But for me, I honestly think that was a big, you know, turning point for me. And then also my parents, like my parents were really good at letting us fail. And as I think to being a dad one day, which I'm stoked about whenever that is, I think that is one of the most valuable traits you can give your kid is like the ability to fail. And I think they taught it to us without saying it aloud. And I think it actually came through sports. It came through that experience of second grade winning the championship, third grade moving and like getting destroyed, yeah. Right? And what do you do with that failure is the question. And like as a third grader, that matures you a lot. And so I think I had failed so much in sports that the podcast was just a natural like stepping stone because I had experienced those emotions in a different sphere. And that's what I think is so special about running. It teaches you so many valuable attributes that you can apply anywhere in life. So I felt like I was taught those attributes in running growing up that then starting a podcast at 15, it's like, well, if this fails, I've experienced failure before. Like no big deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so what was the expectations for you when you're just starting your podcast?
I remember this conversation very vividly with my dad where my dad actually has somewhat of a background in media. So he had like a mic, he knew editing, all that stuff. So when I came to him with the idea, he was super supportive. But I think, again, like I think I brought to him the idea at like 14. And I think he didn't really take me seriously. I wouldn't take my 14-year-old son asking to start a podcast seriously. So he actually said, he was like, write in a Google document your whole plan for it, like the mission, the name, everything. Like, I think he wanted me to put some weight to the claim that I was going to start a podcast. And I remember in the document I wrote, if I can, like, my goal is if I can impact one person through every episode, then I'll consider it a success. And I think putting the like barrier to entry, the goal so small, like one person, actually made it succeed and helped me to stay in it. Because if I wrote Danny like 1,000 listens, first five episodes, dude, I'm giving up on episode one. You know, no one's listening. As you know, like as a fellow podcaster, it takes so long to get some traction. And so I think being able to put a goal down that was like achievable enough and also like had a why behind it, like impact is so much more impactful than a number, right? So putting that down there, I think, helped me from a longevity standpoint of like, it was so low, you know, the barrier to entry was so low, which is impacting one person, that it really helped me to, you know, actually not get discouraged when there weren't plays or I wasn't getting a podcast deal on episode two or all those sorts of things.
Yeah. I mean, keeping the expectations at the appropriate place is so important for running, so important for podcasting, any new habit. And the fact that your dad made you create that Google Doc to put weight behind your right. words really speaks to what he, how much he invested in you. You said like he didn't take it seriously, but he clearly took it seriously enough to make you to expand on your thoughts. So that's a wonderful little bit of parenting nugget right there.
He personally edited, I think, like the first 50 episodes.
50 episodes.
It was something like that. And then I think it got to the point where I wanted to release more because, again, he would just edit like in his free time. And he was like, okay, let me teach you how to edit. And then I learned and it's been history since then. But so yeah, like he was super, I wouldn't have been able to start it without him. Like, I don't want to say that because I think I could have, but he made it very easy and seamless to actually get it kicked off the ground. And also, like, through him editing, you feel, even if it's not spoken, a level of support. Like, you're in this with me. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. When did you realize you loved it?
Right away. How I describe it to this day is it's an excuse to have conversations with people much more successful than yourself. And like, I would like to think that I carried myself somewhat well back then and was somewhat professional. But dude, I look at some of those emails inviting people on and I'm like, oh my, holy cringe. Like, like, oh, I can't believe I sent that. And so I feel like even looking to my 15-year-old self, I was like so much further behind where I am today that to me, it was like, it was crazy full circle moments where, you know, I've always been blessed to have really high quality guests from episode one onward, just because running small enough, it's easy to get in contact with people. And I remember like almost every guest, it was like, wow, I watched this race of yours at NCAAs 4 years ago, or like, you know, I watched you in the Olympics, like stuff like that. And then to be able to talk to them, a lot of times when I'd hop on like the Zoom call, I had to like pause for 3 seconds and be like, am I dreaming? Like, I know your face from seeing you on TV and running because I was like such a fan, that then getting on the call with them, it was like, oh my gosh, like this is insane. So I think I loved it almost right away, just like having the opportunity to pick the brain of such incredible people was like such a honor. And I had so much fun doing it. I still have so much fun doing it. And it's like, you know, the saying, like, create the content that you would have needed like 5 years ago, like, you know, create the content for your former version. And that was imprinted on my brain that first year of doing it, of like going back to that seventh, eighth grade self. What would he have wanted to listen to that he wouldn't have had to go to the library instead? You know what I mean? And so honestly, like selfishly, most of the questions were a lot of like, what would I have wanted to learn about, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, even a year ago, a week ago, whatever it may have been, or things I was going through in the moment, whether it was an injury, struggling with being fixated on the outcome versus the process, being able to ask those questions in real time as I was dealing with it with people so successful was like so much fun.
Also, there was a fact about you being so consistent, right? Like you're the only running podcast in the world that has published 2 to 4 episodes a week for 3 years, basically. It's like that idea is just like such an incredible realization that like the only thing separating you from hitting the charts is so often you putting in the work. And obviously you're an incredibly talented guy to begin with, and you had the encouragement of your parents, but it's like, it's so heartwarming to realize that so many people are just holding themselves back by virtue of not putting in the amount of work necessary. True for running, true for right. podcasting, true for life.
Yeah. One of my favorite phrases that I think I came across in 2023 that I think is so true and so core to who I am and like the releasing an episode every other day now is, if you want different, work different. So many people want different results, but they're not actually willing to do things differently. And there are so many good quotes about like, you can't expect a different result if you're doing the same thing as everyone else. So if I want the top running podcast in the world, why would I follow the same pattern that everyone else is doing? Same thing for running, business, whatever, you know, the listener can apply it to. It's like, if you want different results, you have to do different things to get those different results. And I think so many people think that they can get the result that they see by doing that same amount of work, but everyone's different. And I think most of the time you have to do things differently to see different.
Yeah. And talk to me about the pedestal. Like, you talked about you're freaking out when you see the first runner that you see who comes on the podcast now is on the Zoom meeting and you're like, what is going on? Yeah. This is the coolest thing. How has, since running the podcast, how has that changed, if at all, of your perspective of people who were quote unquote successful or who have been in the Olympics or you've seen on social, like what has that relationship been like for you?
I think I've matured throughout the years and I finally have some weight behind who I am in the sense of like, I know factually that we've been the 15th top sports podcast in the US. So like, why wouldn't I feel a sense of, oh, I am worthy to have a conversation with you versus 15-year-old Dominic was like, I had done nothing. I wasn't good at interviewing or having conversation. Like I was good enough, but you know what I mean? It was, you know, there was more there that would actually make imposter syndrome more likely and to be felt more versus now where, yeah, I still feel it from time to time. I think if you don't, you're probably not pushing enough. But also at the same time, it's like, I feel like there's some weight behind the things I've accomplished. But yeah, from time to time, I mean, there's specific guests where it's like, oh, I mean, Sahil was an example where it's like, oh, you're the freaking man. Like, this is crazy. But I think it's awesome to
shout out Sahil.
I know, amazing. It's I think important to always have a sense of wonder, and even like you as a friend, when I get you on my podcast coming soon, hopefully, like I think there'll be a sense of, oh wow, it is such a privilege to be able to have such an intimate conversation with another individual, whether they're a close friend like you are or someone like Sahil, where my first time speaking with him was the day I met him, things like that. I think it's important to have that sense of like childlike wonder with the person you're talking to, but also realize that you bring things to the table as well and your perspective is worth sharing.
Yeah. Do you remember when that switch happened for you?
I honestly think personal ownership is what made the switch happen. What I mean by that is I shared that like my dad would edit stuff and help out a lot. For me, I think it was when I started to own the business more and like started to edit it, started to do everything because then it was my product. And even present day, like I contract more people, but I still feel that sense of like ownership, like I own this. I think that first year, like having the help of my dad, again, amazing, so grateful for it. But I do think it helped me back a little bit in that sense. I didn't feel like I owned it as much. And then when I shifted and started doing everything myself, that's when I felt a sense of like, oh, this is my product. This is my brand and I'm proud of it. And like, I'm proud of the work I'm doing. And then I feel like I've just, the running community is so kind. Like the athletes I've had on, I've developed lifelong relationships with and to have their support. I remember early on, one of my closest friends to this day, her name's Elise Cranny, and I met her through the podcast. And I remember after I think she was like episode 19 or something. And I remember after she came on, and for context, she's won the US Women's 5K Championship 3 years in a row. So that took her to the Olympics the first year, and then the past 2 years has taken her to the World Championships. She has the indoor record for the Women's 5K. She ran 14:33, I think, Stanford grad. So just like insane. So like someone that a lot of people look up to and admire for her accomplishments. And I remember the first time I had her on, and she had been on a lot of other running podcasts. She was like, oh, this was like my favorite conversation I've had. Or she said something to the extent of that. Like essentially like you're very talented and skilled and I enjoyed it a lot. And I was like, those kind of comments were just like, made my heart melt, you know, as a younger high schooler of like, wow, like maybe I am good at this, you know, because you have all those doubts and those fears early on. Like I think everyone does on their own journey, whether that's fitness or podcasting or starting a business, like you have that kind of spoken judgment in your head. I was gonna say unspoken, but it's very like your thoughts are very loud and clear and you feel those. And then when people share stuff like that, it actually, the thoughts start to change a little bit and it starts to take over some of the negative ones and you start to think, oh, maybe I am good at this, you know?
Yeah, that's such a powerful moment when that stuff like that happens. I'm curious though, what are some examples of things you've quit? Because you seem like someone who just sees things through and you've been running since you were five, podcasting 3 years. Like, have you started stuff and stopped it?
Let's go back to the time we had coffee with each other. So you do your insane deep dives on every guest, which is so like inspiring. I'm constantly trying to learn. And I mean, I think you know this from your guests constantly sharing with you, but like your preparation, I think, is second to none. So that's been amazing to see. So to the listener, Danny doesn't just prepare for podcasts. He prepares the first time he meets someone and gets coffee with them. So Danny's like oh yeah, like you're a very talented, gifted writer. And I'm like, bro, what? And you're like, yeah, I found your newsletter. I was reading it. And I was like, this is crazy. I was like, you do your research. And yeah, the newsletter has been something that I think, like when you shared that was the first thing that came to my mind of I started it and then I stopped it. And then I realized there were 100 days left in 2023. And I was like, I'm going to write something small every single day. And I think I got to like day 29 and then I got sick and missed a day and then just never started again. And it's crazy because that's so not who I am. Like when I start things, I finish them. And I think that mindset actually came from my parents when we would do a sport, sign up for one. I was like, you were expected to finish that season. You could reevaluate at the end of the season, but like you were going to finish. If you had bad coaches, bad teammates, like you were going to get through it. And so for me, I think the newsletter is like the thing in my mind that I struggle with the most because I really want to get better at writing. And part of where the 100-day thing came from was like in high school, as I'm sure you remember, college, you write so much, you're writing essays, like they're not very fun, but specifically my high school, I think something it did amazing was like teaching you how to write and write well. And so then when I got out of high school, I didn't necessarily miss writing, but I missed the feeling of getting better at that thing. You know, writing is like a universal language kind of. And so I thought the newsletter would be an awesome place to kind of share more unique thoughts through written word. And I don't know, I struggle with it because I want to commit myself to it. But every time I've tried, something gets in the way that like prohibits me from actually going all in. So I think that's one of the biggest things that I've quit. And then I honestly think I quit a lot in like different, I don't know, like I think one of the biggest things that holds people back in life is the promises you make to yourself. And specifically for running, you know this, like you make, people think of running and they think of the act of running, but there's so much that goes into it from a sleep perspective, diet perspective, recovery perspective. Yeah, exactly. And I think being a hyper obsessed individual early on about running, like throughout the years, I for sure like quit in a day. I'd do it the next day. But like, if you look at the day itself and like the different promises I made to myself of things I'd do, there were many days that like I fell short or gave in to different temptations of things that weren't going to allow me to take my running to that next level. And even to this day, man, like there's constant ways that I want to improve as an individual in my running, whatever it might be, whether it's like, you know, reading scripture or reading the Daily Stoic or reading for 20 minutes before bed and setting my dang phone down. All sorts of promises that I quit on. Maybe I do it the next day, but the day itself, I quit on myself. Don't do it.
Dude, I've never thought about that concept before, that we sometimes quit on a day. Like that is so powerful because it points to every day as a potential to win, but even more so, it points to like every moment is a potential to win. And if you have a poor meal in the middle of the day that doesn't contribute to where you want to go, it then makes it more difficult for you to hit a workout that night because you're like, oh, I already had a poor meal, so I'm just going to mail this one in. And that leads to the cycle of like the life that you're quitting on and the month that you're quitting on. And so like it expands, but it is so true that quitting is not something that happens just with the newsletter that you wanted to write and now you don't, but it's actually the day to day. And if you frame it from that perspective, every day is an opportunity to win.
And that's why I think people are so true when they talk about the morning. You win the morning, you win the day, because it's all about momentum, in my opinion. And if you can start off your day with the correct momentum, it leads into the next thing, which leads into the next thing. But if you quit on the promises you made to yourself in the morning, for me, the biggest struggle is it eats at my thoughts. And I'm like, because I quit on this, I can quit on this. Or I just dwell there. And instead of actually taking action in the moment, I'm stuck in the past. One of my favorite quotes is, the past is a place of reference, not a place of residence. Mm. And I think so many humans reside in the past, specifically on the promises that they break. They beat themselves up about it. They feel bad about it. And because of that, it provokes actual action in the present moment. And I think one of the biggest skills I've seen in the people I admire and the successful people is they have a very short memory, both from a perspective of failure and success. If they nail the morning, they forget about it. They're in the present moment. They're focusing on how do I hold this promise in the present moment. If they fail, they forget about it. They're like, this new moment is an opportunity to nail it. Same thing with like massive success, you know, Olympic runners I know who medal like the pinnacle of the sport, they forget about it pretty quickly and they're on to the next thing. It's a very interesting balance too, because it's like, how much do you stay grateful for the things you've accomplished versus staying hungry for the things you can't accomplish?
It's a balance that I think we all need to figure out and navigate through as we go through life. How have you, you've hit the charts on Spotify. I see you tweeting about this many followers, or I see you Instagram stories about this many followers or this much success or downloads. Like, how do you personally balance that between success you have and coming to the next present moment?
It's, in my opinion, it's the hardest thing in life. I said that to Gabby Thomas on a podcast the other day. I said, I think the hardest out of over the 300 conversations I've had with the most successful people in the sport, that is the number one thing I think that most people struggle with, is the balance between being grateful for how far you've come and being hungry for how much more you can accomplish. And it's such a difficult balance, because I think most high achievers are ones who are never satisfied. But also at the same time, Danny, I don't want to get to 70 and be super successful, but never actually having enjoyed it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even I was given advice once to like actually lean into that, like almost like disgust with complacency and the constant want for more. Because the person was like, well, that's what makes you successful. And I was like, but I don't want to get to 70, 75, be on my deathbed, having achieved everything, but not actually having enjoyed it. And so for me, it's honestly a constant battle that I haven't mastered. And I think that's super important for people to share of like, oh, I don't have this figured out. Like, I honestly, it's something that that's the reason I listen to podcasts, read books, because I want to be enlightened on how to live a better life. And more specifically, like even your podcast, for example, every new episode is with someone incredibly accomplished. It's an opportunity that we've never had in history before for me to be like, I'm going to, you know, eat my toast before my run this morning and glean insane insight from Danny's guest or you yourself, right? And so I guess to answer your question straight up, like I haven't really mastered it, but I think maybe it was Sahil who shared this, because I actually think I asked him that question. Again, a lot of times my questions on my podcast are things I'm like curious about, dealing with, struggling with. And I think he said something to the extent of, or someone else said something to the extent of like, have a conversation with yourself from 5 years ago. Myself 5 years ago, I honestly don't, well, he would have known what a podcast was, but like he would have just been like, what? Like he probably wouldn't have like fully understood my current present reality. And I think that's so beautiful. It's like, oh, wow, you kind of have made it then. So I think being able to ground yourself and look back on the past and have that conversation, both positive and negative, even the promises thing, it's like, you know, almost, I'm 18, so 13. Yeah, 13-year-old Dominic, like, what would, he was obsessed at running. Like, he was more dedicated to running than I am now. My seventh, eighth grade self, it was literally insane, some of the stuff I do. I can share a story in a minute that was absurd that I did back in sixth grade. But like, so it's like the promises I'm not holding and keeping to myself, would 5 years ago Dominic be proud of? Probably not, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's both. You can use that framework to appreciate success, but also to hold you accountable of like, make your, people say make your future self proud, but I think a lot of times it's make your past self proud. And if they saw you today, would they be proud of you?
But you're saying in some sense, your current self, your past self wouldn't be proud of your current self because you're not training as hard and you value different things.
Yeah, I more mean the promises thing. Like, I think for the longest time, I've had this like ideal day of things I do, and I just have never really like actually been super good about it. Like, I'm sure you hear, it's definitely a big in like the religious community, specifically around like Lent and stuff, of like, like for a specific number of days doing specific hard things. And I've always like admired people who can like live almost a perfect day. And I feel like my day always has some, I don't know, variety of like, again, the promises thing. I'm not sure why that's a theme today, but we'll run with it. Like success and specific promises, but rarely do I have that where I check every box. And I think that's almost beautiful because it shows the incompleteness of life. So I don't know. Again, some of these stuff, so like figuring it out, thinking through it.
You're absolutely allowed to have stuff figured out at 18 years old and 28 years old. And just the fact that you exist and that someone like you is asking questions like this, I'm sure inspires a lot of people like it does myself. And it really points to the fact that the world is, it seems like, I don't know if it's just the people I'm surrounding myself with, but the kids that I see are just so special. Do you also feel that way about like 18-year-old kids today? What's your stance? You're living in the world of 18-year-olds in some respect.
Yeah.
You're talking to more than I am. What is that world look like?
Going back to my high school, so I was homeschooled, and the option in Ohio, I don't know why I struggled to say Ohio there, the option in Ohio was you, if you were homeschooled, you could run or compete in sports for the local school district. So my public school was Springfield. It was about a mile away from my house. And so a lot of days at practice, when they would practice at the school, they didn't run as much, or at least, again, with my knowledge of the sport, I was like, you guys aren't running enough. I would run to practice, do something at practice, and run home. Or run to practice, do practice, and then get picked up by my mom or dad.
Soft.
Yeah. Come on, Goggins. Goggins would not be proud. Run back home.
Getting picked
home.
Up yeah. by your mom? Come on.
Run back home.
As a 13-year-old? Yeah. Get out of here.
And I called that run to Springfield every day while kids were getting out of school. I called it my dose of reality. Throughout the years, and I didn't do that every day, but probably once or twice per week, that route, I don't think I ever saw a kid happy. I don't want to judge their internal, but from an external, hood's always up, headphones in, looking at their phone. If they weren't looking at their phone, you could just feel a sense of brokenness. And we could get into this. The running effect is my passion. Bringing storytelling to the sport of running is my passion. But if you ask what I'll be doing in 10 years, I don't think it has anything to do with running. Running will always be a core to who I am, and I think it'll be a subset of my messaging because I think it's so powerful and what it can bring you and teach you. But what I'm actually most passionate about is that age of high school, college. We've had this conversation a little bit, but like, I think that the level of brokenness in society today for that age range is, it's off the charts. I mean, the Wall Street Journal did an article last year that made me pretty emotional, and I get emotional when I think about it. I think males were close to females, not as bad, but they surveyed a ton of people, one of the biggest surveys for high schoolers ever. And they reported that 57% of female high schoolers, that age range roughly, 57% experience persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness.
Oh.
So that's almost 6 out of every 10 human beings. And I just don't see enough resources on how to live a life that's fulfilling. That's where the hopelessness comes in. And I think that article specifically linked it to social media. And I think that I think there's such positive things on social media that you can glean from if you follow the right people, if you tailor your algorithm in a certain way. But like, we don't understand. When you're 13, 14, or I guess parents are giving their kids phones at like 8, 9, you don't understand how underdeveloped you are emotionally, psychologically, and then you give them a device that like is naturally addictive. I mean, I think the stats are like high schoolers spend like 8, 9 hours on their phone on average. It's insane. It's astronomical. It's like you could have a podcast more successful than me if you simply like put that time to use. You know what I mean? And so I know I'm ranting a little bit here, but I think that age is like more broken than ever and needs more help than ever. And I think the biggest thing is like high schoolers just don't feel valued. And that's why I think it's so important to get invested in sports. And that's why I actually think it can be positive if you become obsessed about a sport, because I think the alternative is actually way worse. And so, yeah, I think having something that you pour your time and energy into is so important because it teaches you positive lessons as well as just like it just matures you and helps you stay focused on a common goal or mission versus the opposite of just like, yeah, I don't want to speak to it, but like, yeah, I think a lot of high schoolers just don't feel important or valued, or like if they don't feel like they have a mission, but they don't have anyone walking with them. I think the most thing I've gleaned the most from my guests and just like learning about success and listening to podcasts like yours is the most important tool to be successful is who you surround yourself with, your environment. And high schoolers, I think, are toxic in the people they surround themselves with. You know, I think every high school has 5 really, really good kids. but very few people will actually take the courage to become friends with those five kids and surround themselves with those five kids and cut out people who weren't like those five kids. So 10 years from now, like, that's what I'm all in about is like, Chris Williamson, great podcast, your podcast, great podcast, like so many good podcasts out there on like self-development and the pursuit of excellence and how to live a meaningful life. But I actually don't know if there's a single podcast that's like tailored towards the high school audience. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because when you tailor the messaging, it's completely different. And so like, even for you, like I would love to, you know, outside of like chopping it up about running, which we'll do when I have you on, like I'd love to have you speak to high schoolers specifically, because I don't think that's really out there.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting going back to this conversation about what happened with me. It was like, I had different blogs and I was pushed to be a normal kid. And I accepted, okay, it's easier for me to be normal, like do what everyone else is doing, party and make friends and not do this crazy stuff on the internet, even though I feel some sense that that's where the world is going. It's easier to be normal, quote unquote, than it is to follow what is actually calling my heart.
Right.
And so I guess my question to you is, how come, where were there any pulls for you to be normal, to have that dose of reality and to live in that dose of reality? How did you persist beyond that?
Sure. It comes back to the environment thing and being the youngest and going back to like saying most of my friends were my brother's friends. My level of expectation was so different compared to the average kid. And very quickly, I learned the power of community and I started surrounding myself with the most insane people. My first ever podcast guest, Alex Osberg, he was one of the people I cold emailed like 2 years before that. And we had conversation on the phone every 2 weeks for those 2 years leading into it. So he was a very natural first guest to this day, mentor and one of my best friends. You know, as a freshman in high school, being mentored by a Stanford grad, one of the fastest kids in the country, someone who understood how to live a meaningful life. And just like to this day, I think he's one of the brightest individuals I've ever known about, quite frankly, not just known, but known about, was like so transformative. So when you have a mentor and a friend like Alex, let's just take Alex, for example. The level of expectation you feel from that person without them even saying it, it might not even be there. You know, Alex loves me regardless, so I don't even think it was there. It's like when I'm feeling in my head the choice to be normal, I'm like, you can't be, because you need to live up to the version that someone like Alex expects of you, even though I don't think that expectation was there. You know what I mean? We create these narratives in our head, which I actually think a lot of times can be good. Even for like my oldest brother, Joseph, you know, incredibly successful. It's like, even to this day, I think about it, like, what, how can I make these people proud? And what is the version of myself that I can bring out that will, yeah, like, what's the best version of myself I can bring out? So yeah, again, they're always like the you know, you feel those urges to be normal. Or again, I think it comes in those choices day to day, and we fail sometimes, we succeed other times. But for the most part in high school, it was always like, I want to be great. I want to be remembered. Like, and that started out in running. It was like, no one in my city is really good at running. I want to outwork everyone and make it to states and like be really good and be remembered. And I think over time that's transferred into other things. But I think from an early age, I always felt that I wanted to live differently. And like thinking about it today, it's like, why would you want to live a life like 8 billion other human beings? Like, the odds of you existing is 400 trillion to one. So it's like, you really think you are meant to like live the same life as 8 billion other people? Like, I don't think so. So I think that's so important to realize like the uniqueness and specialness of every single human being. And that's honestly a message I think more high schoolers need to hear, the 400 trillion to one stat. You know, why do we see crazy levels of suicide? I think it's because, again, they feel not needed. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't feel like they're needed. And when you say a stat like that, whether you're religious or not, it's like, I think it makes you feel a level of uniqueness and specialness. Like, 400 trillion to one, that's a number like the human brain can't comprehend. And so when you share something like that, not only does it make you feel needed and special, but with that comes a level of, I'm meant to do something great with my life.
What do you do to make sure that 18-year-olds or 15-year-olds are needed in today's day and age?
I think when you say that, I think to the conversations I have like on Instagram and DMs, and I think it's just making them feel like special. if they say something nice, it's not just thank you or liking the message. It's like, how's your training going? You know, do you have a race coming up? Something I always try to say, and not just say, but embody, is like, if you ever need anything, I'm always one message away. Like, to hear that from someone they barely know, or they just like really know of, like, that can change a kid's life. I don't know what their parent situation is like. I don't know what their friend situation is like. So I think to those listening, like, being that person, I love this quote from Simon Sinek. He's like, you know, I tell my friends they should never cry alone, you know? And even for a stranger, I don't want a stranger to cry alone if I'm one call away or one message away. And so I think the ability to display interest and like, I actually care about you, can change someone's life. I definitely think that. I think it's important to make someone feel needed and special and unique. And a lot of times that can just come through, when's your next race? How do you feel about it?
Yeah. Seeing somebody is very powerful. And that's what you're forced to do when you have a podcast with guests. You right. see people nonstop every day and really look into their eyes and understand their soul and what they're about. And, you know, I think part of the reason that that's happening for 15 to 18 year olds is because nobody actually sees them. They are looking at a screen and the screen doesn't actually see them. So,
although, not to get controversial here, but TikTok, if you look through there.
No, they're looking at you.
and so I'll push back.
No, please do. And the corporation seeing you is way different than a human being.
No, I completely. No, I just have to nag on TikTok
please,
a little bit.
Please do. And it's something that I think, you know, is really the root cause of so much pain and suffering, is people not feeling seen. And when you have, in order to see someone else, you first need to look at yourself. Mm. How have you looked at yourself? To be the light that, I mean, you are such a light in this world who is seeing so many other people. Where does Dom see Dom?
Yeah. Next level questioning. Like, when I listened to your podcast and then you asked if I would do one with you, I was like, oh man, like, I'm so stoked to answer questions like these because no one asks them. They're so interesting. Like, I don't even know if I've ever thought of that question. And so even in thinking about this conversation, I'm like, I'm excited to be asked things I've never even considered before. So I appreciate questions like that. And because I haven't really thought about them, the response is always like, from an emotional perspective, because it's like, oh, I haven't really sat with that. You know what I mean? I think the most important thing actually is to sit with those things and sit with the deep questions instead of giving quick responses. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I think for a lot of people that comes through journaling, going on walks, I recommend without music or podcast to actually hear yourself, things like that. But how do I see myself? I mean, I think a lot of it comes from a religious perspective of like how God designed me. And so I feel immense love from Jesus, you know, for creating me in his image and likeness. And so I think when I see myself or try to, there's an image of like love, because that comes from Jesus. But yeah, it's such a hard question, because I think identity is something like every human struggles with or tries to figure out. And I think that question is like essentially like, what's your identity, you know? And I think it's very, very, it's one of the hardest skills ever, I think, to actually know your identity. And this could get us in a rabbit hole, but again, I think that's where religion comes in too, of like seeing your identity in something bigger than yourself actually, and like why you're created. And my biggest worry with my guests is that their identity is fully caught up in a fleeting thing.
Oh, that's such a good line.
Like, it's so difficult because running is such an amazing thing and the things they've accomplished is so amazing. But what I'm passionate about is like analyzing the most successful people and breaking it down for bite-sized, you know, individuals. Michael Phelps, extreme depression after winning an astronomical amount of gold medals. Why? Like, why? It was because his identity was fully wrapped up in a fleeting activity. And so for me, I have to be grounded in something more. I mean, I remember early on in high school when I'd get injured or a race wouldn't go my way, the world was ending. It was like so crushing. Why is that? Because my identity was fully running. Now I'm in a spot where even this is a good example, like, you know, well, I got the flu and then I had to take 5 days off. And then this week I had like a little Achilles flare up and I had to take yesterday off. You know, Dominic 5 years ago would have been like, oh, your fitness is lost. Like, you know, you can't race anytime soon. You got to get it back. Now because my identity is in something that lasts and is grounded, it's just like, oh, that's okay. It's just an activity. And I think so many of my guests, their whole world is running. So when they get injured or a race doesn't go their way, they feel the weight of the world crashing down on them. And so I think it's so important to explore something within you that will ground you when you think about your identity. Something that isn't fleeting, that isn't an activity. Because if you're defined by one thing, you'll be forgotten easily.
If you're defined by one thing, you'll be forgotten easily. I mean, and you'll forget. The crazy thing is, people will spend their whole lives trying to achieve one thing and then achieve it and then be upset when it's over because they no longer can live as the person who's pursuing the thing that they want to achieve. And so if you are basing your identity around being the type of person who accomplishes something, you're going to find some level of lack at the end of that. And the quest for something deeper, I mean, when did that begin for you?
I honestly think it was in unison with my spiritual journey. When I discovered Jesus personally, so I was born and raised Catholic. And, you know, I went to Mass, you know, every Sunday with my parents, with my family. I knew God existed. Here's how I explain it. There's enough, in my opinion, evidence out there to pretty rationally believe in Jesus as a God. But there's a difference between believing in something and experiencing something.
Yes.
And when I experienced Jesus for the first time in a real and tangible and personal way is when that transformed me. And that's when I started to live for something deeper. And that fled into everything I did, including things like the podcast. So now I'm not just thinking, oh, how do I create an entertaining episode or even like a helpful episode? It's how do I create something that will change the listener's life? Maybe that's literally just putting a smile on their face for the high schooler who's having a tough day. Or maybe it's something very tangible of, you know, like bringing out something in Sahil and him working his magic to say something that's like, oh, I feel like this is going to change my life. You know what I mean? So I think the level of depth came with relationship with Jesus and realizing that I should be living for something deeper. And it's not even like, if you listen to my podcast, religion is not brought up in everyone. For me, I never want to force something upon a guest. The episode is for the guest to make them, you know, like the hero of their story. If the guest has some level of spirituality, I always try to bring it in. But a lot of times depth for me is bringing out qualities of spirituality, qualities of patience, qualities of one of my favorite principles of like Judeo-Christian values, love your neighbor as yourself. It's so powerful. If I can bring that out in an individual to talk about, you know, the love and sacrifice they show to their teammates, it's those kind of values in a deeper way, even if it's not in your face religion. And that's not the purpose of the podcast either. I would have started a spirituality podcast if that was my goal. And I think it's beautiful to use kind of mediums like running to drive yourself into something deeper. I had a funny guest. He said he's like a trail runner. He runs for Gonzaga. He was one of the best runners in high school in the nation. And he was like, go on a 2.5 hour run on the trails and tell me you still don't believe in God. And it's like the aspect of being in your head for so long by yourself. It's like the inner philosopher. I told Zach, I was like on our recent podcast, I was like, I basically asked him a question of philosophy with running. There's a concept in the running community that like runners are naturally philosophers. Hmm. And the reason is because you spend so much time in your head that you actually are attached to that kind of like who you are as a person. Those qualities come out. You can never hear them if you're on your phone all day, which most people are. So being able to get out there and be with your thoughts kind of connects you to something deeper.
Yeah, it's meditation. I've meditated for 4 years, but running is a different form of the same activity. And it's so beautiful because I don't run with headphones and I know nothing coming in often, I would say 90% of the time. And it's just time I can spend with me and God and just like connect with what is. And it's really a beautiful thing that I recommend everyone experience. Go outside, run without headphones. And if you can get to 20 to 60 minutes, it's like there's something that changes and what happens is special.
You also feel your body. Like how often do we think of our body as like an actual moving entity? You know, think about the amount of steps we take every day, yet how conscious are we of those steps? You go out and run, you're going to experience it. You're going to feel like a vessel that's actually accomplishing something. And it also makes you so grateful, because any runner knows, like, you have hiccups, you have injuries. And during those periods of injury, all you're thinking is, all I want to do right now is go for a run.
Yeah.
So then when you come back and you're healthy, you are so grateful, even if you're out of shape. You know, you're like, wow, this gift of running is enough. The paces don't matter. The mileage doesn't matter. Because, you know, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I couldn't do this simple activity. And Ryan Hall, to this day, he's the American record holder in the marathon. His dad, I think, coached him throughout a lot of his childhood. And his dad, I heard him on a podcast, actually may have been Ryan's, where he discussed what he would tell runners who didn't want to do their runs or like were just struggling with motivation. And Ryan's dad, like, I forget the exact story, but paraphrasing here, he knew someone or was friends with someone, or maybe it was his dad or something, was like in a wheelchair and couldn't move, was paralyzed. And so this sounds extreme, but what Ryan's dad would have these runners do is he would say, before you go on your run, go in front of your front door and lie down and don't move, and realize that that's a lot of people and that they would do anything to do the activity you're about to do. Realize that the gift of running is truly a gift and not just an activity. And how often do we, and I think there's a time and a place to not want to go for a run. It's unreasonable to think you're always going to want to go for a run, but reframing that mindset of like, wow, this is such a unique gift and blessing to do this act. What I like to call running is poetry in motion. Like, it's an art form, in my opinion. But that simple activity of laying in front of your front door and not moving, that'll change you quick in your perspective on the activity of running.
Yeah, that hit me. That really did just now. Like, wow. Powerful story. I want to go back to, you said you grew up in the church, but then you chose Jesus or experienced Jesus in a way that you had never before. I find this so fascinating of when people get religion pushed on them, not pushed necessarily that you got to push, but versus experiencing it and what that difference is, because that's like a whole new level of love for God,
yeah.
I feel like. So can you take me through what happened exactly to make you experience it?
Yeah. First thing I'll say is these are purely my experiences and fully true about what I'm about to say. But, you know, I think they'll be when you, it's hard because when people don't experience something, there's always the doubt of it, right?
Yes.
This is purely my experience. And I think, yeah, I'll say what I was going to say in a minute. Yeah. So grew up going to Mass. And I think those experiences, again, it's like I fully accepted that Jesus existed. I've actually fully believed it, but I didn't like understand the person, as you were kind of saying. I'm like trying to pin the moment. There were like a few small moments. And again, here's where it gets a little crazy and people will have their own opinions.
Dude, be you.
Yeah.
You know, and also we can cut out anything that you don't want in the podcast or—
No, I'm full of game. I just, these are extreme experiences. So I experienced a few times growing up actual healing. And again, I want to be very clear that like, I believe Catholics believe that like this comes from God and he merely uses us as vessels for people to experience like his love, different things. So I experienced, like I was in a room with undeniable people who I personally knew who had stage 4 cancer, were prayed over for healing. And a week later went to the doctor, completely gone. That's one thing. Cause like, you can't see cancer. But a very tangible example, my oldest sister, Annie, she, I think like fractured her foot running down the stairs, which was a kind of a funny story because I was an OCD as a kid, but I was so type A. Like I got so annoyed at my siblings for running down the stairs because I thought I would like ruin the stairs because it makes them like creaky. This is actually a funny intricacy of my childhood. Like my siblings hated me because I would like tell my parents, I was like, they're ruining the stairs. So anyways, I remember when she did that, I was like, see, I told you, this is what happens when you run down the stairs. So she like fractured her foot. And then I was going to a summer camp, and this is where like a lot of experiences have happened for me. Jesus moves in powerful ways there. And she was prayed over for healing, and she was in a boot. And it, again, as my sister, I see it. Like I see the pain. I see her foot is not normal. And I just see it. Like I wasn't there when she was being prayed over, but like 30 minutes later, I see Annie walking around. I'm like, what? Like, what? What happened? And she's like, I was prayed over and I don't feel any pain anymore. Another experience that was just completely undeniable. I think this is the most like powerful, this is undeniable, was so this specific camp, it's called Catholic Youth Summer Camp. It's actually Joseph's the director of worship there, my oldest brother. And it's mainly like middle schoolers and high schoolers. They run camps throughout the summer. And again, like so broken, so many of these kids, and a few of them had self-harm scars that like were very visible, were prayed over, completely gone. The skin was completely normal. So for me, it's like, I don't like, it's just, it's faith that that is, I don't tangibly understand how it could be anything else. So it's experiences like that where I felt Jesus moving in powerful ways. For me personally, I think probably like eighth grade was when I actually experienced Jesus for the first time, like in a personal way, and that kind of transformed me. But I'd say my senior year was the first experience that I felt Jesus moving through me, and that was like so undeniable. So there are different gifts that Jesus can bring. For some people, it's actually like the gift of like healing through Jesus. Other people, it's the gift of prophecy through Jesus. I was given that, or maybe it existed in me, I just hadn't tapped into it. But my senior year, some undeniable experiences of prophecy where I would get words. I had the ability to like hear God, and I was able to relay that information to people. And some of the craziest, like, so I'll give you an example of one. So there's this person, I'll keep her name private for anonymity. And I got the word, so random. I got the word that Jesus uses her joy to impact people's lives, and that she's been struggling with joy a lot recently, and like it's been eating at her spirit. And here's where it gets crazy. I was like, I heard from God specifically that like, I heard the word like grocery store joy. Like, I was like, okay, this is so weird. I was like, and that like Jesus specifically wants to use her joy for like people in the grocery store. So I share this word with her. I feel like an absolute fool. I walk away and I'm like, I feel like such an idiot.
This is a woman you know, you don't know.
Didn't know her. No, didn't know her at all. Like
high school.
Like, she was in her 20s, I think.
In her 20s.
Yeah.
Random woman.
Yeah. Like didn't know her at all. And
first time seeing her.
I think I met her like 2 days before.
Okay.
But hadn't talked to her personally at all. So knew nothing about her. Didn't even know her name. The next day she came up to me and was like, you have no clue how much that meant. She went on to explain that yes, joy was like a pillar of her life. But earlier that week she had gone to the grocery store. Normally like she likes to like dance in the aisles and like not necessarily sing, but like be like super joyous and like overflowing with joy. And she said last time she was in the grocery store, she was like quiet, kept to herself, didn't talk to anyone, and just felt like this insane level of what's the opposite of joy? I don't know, like grief,
despair.
Yeah. It was eating at her all week that like she didn't experience and share that joy in the grocery store.
What?
Yeah. So it's like stuff like that. It's like, again, only me and her, I guess, can confirm that that actually happened, right? For all you know, I could be making that up. But for me, undeniable. And it's like, it's undeniable that Jesus put those thoughts in my head and to share them with her to help her to experience his love in a greater way. I've had, like, there was another time where got a very specific word about this woman, never met her before, didn't even see her face because it was like a darker room and because it was like a night of praise and worship. So the lights were like dim, didn't even see her face. And I got a like hyper specific word about just like turmoil in her family. And like, again, it was eating at her. It was really affecting her. And it got like hyper specific about like relationship with her husband. I'm forgetting the rest of it. A lot of times I forget these things because it's hard to explain. It's like the spirit moving through me. And then it's like, it's not even my words. It's hard to explain. Mm-hmm. Leave, don't think anything of it. Again, a lot of times part of me is like, that was not true at all. You just made a fool out of yourself. The person's going to like think you're crazy. After the event, you know, hour more of the event, this lady comes walking up to me. Again, I hadn't seen her face, so I didn't know who she was. She's like, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? I'm like, yeah. She's like, can you sit down with me? I'm like, yeah, of course. And she like begins to cry. And what had happened was she was going through a really tough divorce and the husband was really really trying hard to have like full ownership over the kids. And again, the word I shared was like hyper specific to that. How I would describe it is once you experience something for the first time, you can never on experience it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, experiencing Jesus in incredibly powerful ways, I can't unexperience it. And I can't unexperience that way of living and that way of joy that comes with living, you know, a Christ-centered life. I'm honestly, forget your original question, but that's kind of like, those are the experiences where I was like, wow, okay. Like, not only does Jesus exist, but like, he wants to actually live tangibly in each human being and like use us to bring each other closer to him.
Yes. And the question was around the moments you realized and saw and felt the presence of God, presence of Jesus versus just understanding it intellectually. But I want to challenge you on mm-hmm. something, and that is to own your gift. I believe you fully. I see you fully. I know you're an amazing human being, and I know you have nothing to lie about or to create. But
right.
But you have such a hesitancy in this moment of like, I know this sounds crazy, and I don't even believe myself. But like, what would it look like to own it fully?
Mm. I think what it boils down to is it's literally all what will other people think of me.
Right.
It's literally all of that. It's what will the listener think of me right now? You know what I mean? What will the follower who I post this podcast about, and they know me as the running guy, and they hear this and they're like, oh, what? And they've never experienced Jesus before. So it's so out there because yeah. they haven't experienced it. That's what it boils down to. So even what I'll step into boldness here. And that's a prayer I've been praying, like step into boldness and courage. What would it look like is on runs, or just different experiences, I hear these words for people and I don't share them. And I've seen the ways in which God has transformed lives through those words. And so it's deep regret in a sense, because I don't know how that word could impact that person. I'd also like to say, I don't know the amount of words that were wrong. I also don't know the amount of words that were right that I never heard about. Those two experiences, a lot of people keep it to themselves because some of these words are very hyper-specific. Even an individual in December came up to me, a word I had shared with him, I guess it'd be 3 years ago at this point. And he was like, oh, it was dead on accurate. And I was like, oh, wow. But I didn't know because he didn't share it right away. So I think what stepping into it fully would look like would be actually embracing the gift and stepping into it with people who have no faith. Because there's a sense of security in spiritual circles that, yeah, you might be considered crazy. And I've even had words I've shared before that I like and tell the person's not receptive at all. But like, there's still a sense of most people there in these places, at church, whatever it might be, have a sense of spirituality that they can tangibly understand to an extent. But in public, that's another question. You're playing Russian roulette there. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it's been awesome to have witnesses of people, friends, in circles that I've been with them in public when they have stepped into it and seen lives change as a result of it. So I think stepping into it fully would look like doing that, being more bold when I have a word, trusting. Yeah, it's all trusting God. And I think a lot of it is, it's not even like trusting that the word's going to be completely accurate. It's like trusting in just being faithful to him. Like mm-hmm. to the call, you know, you read through the gospels and it's like the disciples were scared all the time, doubted Jesus all the time. Even like after the resurrection, I think it's Thomas, like he's called Doubting Thomas, because even though Jesus is in their presence after dying, he doesn't believe that it's actually Jesus. And it's like, how? He's right in front of you. How do you not believe? And he's like, I forget the exact verbiage, but he's like, only when I like put my hands into your side and feel the marks of the nails will I believe, you know, something to that extent. So I think it's something that like all believers struggle with, is the aspect of like full belief and confidence in Jesus. But I think most people who believe in Jesus believe the opposite, that like there's Satan, there's an enemy. And I think that's where a lot of those thoughts and doubts creep in of, oh, that word's not accurate, or, oh, you know, all those different things. So answering your question straight up, boldness of doing, of being faithful to words when I get them.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And what, when you think about what other people think of you, why is that something that comes to mind as, like, why is that still in the way?
It's something I'm maturing in.
Yeah.
There are certain aspects of my life that I'm good at. Even people ask me in high school, when they ask me about the podcast present day and I sure I started in high school, they're like, oh, well, did you have those feelings of what did other people think of you?
Yeah.
I didn't really, quite frankly, because I was so secure in it. And so I think I'm good at that in certain aspects, not good at it in others. But I don't know. I mean, at the core of every human, we want to feel loved. We want to feel approval. And so when you're doing something and sharing something that's so contrary to how some individuals live or believe, it's like, yeah, you feel more ruffled.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And I think specifically with spirituality, it's such a touchy personal subject that, you know, you always worry, what will the other person, I don't know where they're at in their spiritual journey, like what will they think of me? So I think it's because of that, because it's like such a touchy subject. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that what other people think of you has nothing to do with you.
Mm.
Because like you said, it's not you who's giving that word. There's no you for that person to be upset at,
right,
or mad at.
Right.
They're just God moving through you. And you have to accept that that's what it is. And their perspective of you is not even of you.
Right.
And maybe you're given the wrong word so that the person could learn something or think about something in a new way.
Sure.
So.
And that's also where the identity piece comes in. What's your identity? And are you staying true to your identity? If you are staying true to your identity, why would you let other people affect that? You know, if my identity is in Jesus, why aren't I fully grounded in that? If I'm fully grounded in that, I'm not thinking that of what will other people think of me. Because why do we think that? Because it could be an attack on our identity. But if our identity is in something that's lasting, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that is such a perfect way to encapsulate so much of the things that we chase that are trying to get validation from others, when getting validation from God is really all that there is.
Right. And everyone's validated in God. Like,
yes.
People don't realize that.
Yes.
Like one of the biggest roadblocks, I think, for people into relationship with Jesus, into relationship with God, is the aspect of they don't feel worthy of his love.
Mm.
But if you read the scriptures and you fully understand him, he's an all-knowing, all-loving God despite our imperfections. And that's what makes it the most pure love, is that, you know, most humans sin on a daily basis and do things contrary to like life with Jesus, but he loves us despite that. And he died on the cross for our sins. And so few people, I think, actually realize that because that's where the human element comes in. We've been taught and we feel, and this is just naturally how humans are, that love will change if we act certain ways. If I'm rude to you, you won't love me as much. And so we're kind of programmed into thinking that way, that we can't even comprehend that an individual would love us regardless of what we do.
And I'd imagine that you were exposed to people who gave you that gift early on in your life, whether it's your mom, your dad, like, or specific people at the church or specific people in general who gave you unconditional love, and you could experience that and hence try to give it to others.
Right.
Who were those people for you?
I think the most impactful person is my oldest brother, Joseph. He's just such a good, kind heart. And I've told you this a little bit before, even before recording today, like his journey was very similar to mine, just different spheres, him music, me kind of running podcasting. He didn't go to college. He was more unique than me in the sense that he got a full ride, accepted it, and then 2 weeks later felt called to ditch it. And seeing how he went through that and his process and his journey, while also just being the kindest individual ever, I know truly, he's one of the few individuals I know truly that I could call him at any time, and regardless of the news, he would like be there for me, and be able to, another Simon Sinek reference, he'd be able to sit in the mud with me. Mm. Very few people can do that well, where a lot of people want to give advice, give their input. Very few people, I think you're one of those people that has a presence where they can just be there with you and you feel it and you feel loved without words needing to be said. And I think, yeah, Joseph has always shared that kind of unconditional love. I remember growing up, us three brothers would joke compared to our sisters. Our sisters, you know, someone would take a toy growing up or someone would do something and it was like hell for a month between the two of them. The boys, there was some argument and it would be resolved in 3 minutes and it'd be back to playing superheroes. And so I don't know. I was just like, yeah, so grateful to be, and it's tough because part of me is like, oh, I feel bad. People don't have those experience, like don't have a Joseph in their life. And so for me, it's like, it's extreme gratitude when I say these words. But I also think people can find their Joseph. There's so many, again, 8 billion human beings out there. Like there's so many amazing human beings out there. If you can start to construct your environment, that's honestly one of the most beautiful things about social media is like, you can find all sorts of people that you can connect with. Never before have we had that. Or there was this concept I heard, forgetting what the source was, but they were talking about you can have mentors that you never meet through books, through podcasts. Like I was mentored by Sahil before I was mentored by Sahil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we've never been in a time, day and age that like that's actually possible. Of course, there's nothing like the real human connection and even that like phone aspect, being able to call someone, being able to talk to someone, but it's a start. And I think when you get invested in like that kind of specific type of content or way of living, it attracts you to other people who are also interested in that and you can connect. But yeah, I mean, like I love the saying, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. And for me, like in high school, I think even to this day, like my dad would joke, but like he was serious. My dad had so many friends around the neighborhood growing up. That was just they played sports all day. Like the classic, we were out from 8 a.m. till my mom rang the dinner bell, you know, that type of thing. Me, I can count on one hand. I don't even have a number for you. That's how maybe 2-3 people who were truly friends in high school that were other high schoolers. I had like colleagues to sound weird, whereas like peers. My teammate, yeah, peers, there you go. Peers that you know, I was a leader on the team, so it was that same aspect of like, I'm always here for you if you ever need anything, and I truly mean it, and I'll do anything for you if you ever need it. And my hour at practice with you, 2 hours at practice with you, like I will be there for you. I will converse with you, like all that sort of stuff. But there wasn't a sense of I want to be friends with you because I'm not being pushed. That's not what friendship is to me. Mm. And so in high school, it was a lot more mentorship. Like I consider my high school years, I more had mentors than friends. Even Joseph, like brother, friend, but like such a mentor to this day. You know, I'm learning from people like that. And even to this day, I definitely have friends at this point. But like I just feel that I have the best setup with my community in the sense of like, they're just people in my life that are just constantly pushing me, like chiseling me. It's like, I'm a rock and they're like chiseling me into the person I'm made to be. And so, yeah, I think like having those people in your life and seeking them out and also knowing their place, never going to accept advice from Joseph on running. We'll accept advice from Joseph on spirituality, how to live a good life, how to be more kind, more loving. Same with other people who are really skilled in business, negotiation, growing a podcast. We'll accept advice on that. Won't ask them about how to live a better life with Jesus. You know what I mean? So I think it's also knowing people's roles and understanding that it's human nature to not be perfect in every aspect and to know people's limitations. I think so many people ask for advice and things that they shouldn't be asking for advice and from that person. Yeah.
You can love someone and also say, I appreciate your advice, but I'm not going to take that.
Like right.
You don't need to love someone and also take everything that they say as factual and true and follow. And just on the point of your brother, I mean, he's an incredible recording artist. We'll link his work down below. And, you know, I think the fact that you can spend time with someone by virtue of listening to their music or be listening to them on a podcast really helps understand that like the resources are out there if you have the willingness inside of you to seek the light.
Right.
How have you sought the light?
I think it all comes back to like, what do you want out of life? You know? And for me, I want to kind of my core mission, my motto for life is that I want to help people turn their what ifs into reality. Because for me in eighth grade, I had that what if, and it took me 2.5 years to act on it. And now my whole reality is a byproduct of taking action on that what if. So whether it's the running effect or something else or 700 other businesses, that mission will always be core to who I am. So what I like to imagine is how do I get to my deathbed one day and not have any what ifs? To make sure that I turned each big what if into a reality and in the process inspiring other people to do so. So with that motto and kind of life goal in mind, that's what goes back to your question of like, how do I seek the light? It's what are the things I can do to make sure I'm taking action on the what ifs? And that, I think a lot of that looks like personal betterment, like seeking the light. How I interpret that is like, how do you seek personal betterment? And I view that spiritually, fitness wise, friendship wise, how am I giving back to other people wise? And I think there are different responses for each of those. But I think it's constantly living in a state of improvement. And anyone who tells you that you, like the classic terminology, you're either improving or you're not. It's just factual. And that's okay to acknowledge when you're falling short, like the promises thing, but using that to fuel you for personal betterment. And so for me, in seeking the light, that looks like constantly chiseling myself, you know, constantly working on that rock that is myself, and constantly striving to be better. I understand my imperfections and that I'll never be perfect, and that at a point, personal betterment, like it becomes cheesy and too much. But I think, yeah, like it's like I'm not trying to optimize. Like it's like, it's not like I'm trying to be in an ice bath while recording this so I can get, you know what I mean? Like I think there's, you got to understand time and a place for everything. But I think living with that framework of constantly trying to be better, not just for yourself, but for others. Like thinking about the friend thing, like, how am I being better for that person? You know, I'm not sure if that exactly answers your question. That's just how I interpret it.
It absolutely does answer the question. And you really are the light, my friend. Like, I'm so grateful to have known you. My life is better by virtue of knowing you.
And likewise.
You're a special human being.
Likewise.
And keep doing you. Keep doing exactly what you're up to. And the philosophies that you're living by have already borne incredible fruit in your life, and they will continue to do so, God willing. So,
thank you. I mean, that's the, like, it gets me so excited that I'm only 18. I think in my circles, I'm like, oh, I wish I was older. You know, I wish I didn't look like a baby still.
No, dude.
But
you're
like,
perfect the way you are.
It stokes me so much that I'm so grateful that I'm one of those 400 trillion to one. Like, what a, I mean, just sit with that. Like, it's insane. Like, that I was chosen. There's this great line in scripture that like, before you were in the womb, I knew you. That like, Jesus created me and put me on this earth for a reason. Not just me, but every single listener, every single individual on earth. And let that like fuel you and excite you. And let that drive your mission. Or if you don't have one, let that create one for you. For you, you're so gifted in conversations and using those to literally change people's lives. Lean into that because of that fact. Maybe a listener right now is in a tough spot. They don't feel like they have a passion, something that's giving back, something that's bearing fruit in their life and other people's lives. Let that fact of you're so special, created in such an incredible, astronomical way, literally, let that fuel your ability to do something unique, do something new. I think so many people just get caught up in the normal ways of living. You know, I'm going to wear this New Balance shoe because my five friends think it's cool. I'm going to wear these specific clothes because my friends think it's cool. I'm going to take these classes because I think my parents want me to do business because I think it's going to make a lot of money. And then I can retire at 65 and hopefully I have a happy marriage and kids. And then I'm going to die. Like, we weren't meant to live like that. And your friend Dan Coe has got this fantastic saying, probably going to butcher it, but like essentially, how to nearly guarantee success in life. Observe what 99% of society does. Do the opposite. I think it's so true. Like, again, if you want to live an amazing life, I think you have to do the opposite of what society does. And with that's going to come pain because it is different. But when you look back at the end of your life, you're going to be happy you did things differently.
Beautiful. Dom, that's an incredible place to come to a close. Where should we send people to connect with you further, stay up to date on what you're doing? And can you believe this man is 18 years old? Like, he probably gets it every day, and God bless him because he deserves it. But it is such an absolute pleasure to be able to witness just who you are and what you've become. And I'm so excited to follow along the journey. Where should we go to follow along?
Yeah, it's Dominic Schlier, is now known as The Running Effect. It's funny, at meets I'll go to, you'll hear, I don't think people know my name,
it's okay.
Which is funny. I think that's slowly changing. So The Running Effect, effect with an E, really on anything, Instagram, would probably be my medium of choice. I think Instagram is kind of where I've chosen to document everything. And then I guess by the time this drops, we'll be creating a YouTube channel. And I'm beyond excited about that for many reasons, but mostly, and I would honestly encourage you to get into exactly what I'm saying. Like, I want to be able to document everything I'm doing. And I kind of regret that I wasn't able to document 2023 as much as possible. I'll try to keep my answer here. But like 2022, we were at like $200 in revenue, $300 in revenue. And then like 2023, I think we like got right over six figures as a business in revenue. And I would have loved to see those conversations. And like, yeah, like not that I wanted our coffee conversation recorded, but like some of those experiences and like to be able to look back and be like, go back to that video of like my reaction coming out of that coffee shop and be like, yo, that was a, that got, whoa, like that was a, I'm glad I have that friendship now. Some of those different things are, so that's a big push for me. And part of the reason I'm moving to Columbus, Ohio is to be able to lean into some of that stuff. YouTube, essentially, very excited about it, to visually document the things I'm building. You can do it a little bit in podcasting, but that's not the focus of my podcast. And I think it's important to know the focus and keep the focus. And so YouTube for me, yes, they'll be running mixed into it. Yes, I'll do stuff with, you know, crazy professional runners and whatnot and document their incredible lives and training. But for me, it's going to be just an awesome way to literally document where I go in life. And also to stay true to the mission. So for me, the goal isn't 100,000 subscribers by the end of the year. To me, the goal is I want to be able to show my kids one day this period of my life. And to me, that feels very wholesome. So Danny, I appreciate the opportunity to have a conversation. And even if the cameras weren't on, like just so fun to just jam, going back to the original word we used early on. Such a privilege and an honor, and excited to see this blow up. Like it's so cool to hear the different people you have on, whether you've known them or they're the first time you're talking with them, be in awe of how good you are at what you do. And it's so cool knowing you a little bit to be like, yes, like I understand why they're experiencing this, but like, I'm so glad they are. And I'm so glad they're seeing how special Danny is. So it's been a privilege to be a part of this, and more importantly, to be in your life a little bit and just see all the ways you're moving and touching lives. You're crushing it, man.
Thank you. Truly received. I love you, bro. Thank you for everything.
Appreciate you.